This is Audible.
The Casual Vacancy. Written by J.K. Rowling. Part 2. Fair Comment. 7.33. Fair comment on a matter of public interest is not actionable. Charles Arnold Baker. Local Council Administration. 7th edition. 1. It rained on Barry Fairbrother's grave. The ink blurred on the cards. Siobhan's chunky sunflower head defied the pelting drops, but Mary's lilies and freesias crumpled, then fell apart. The chrysanthemum ore darkened as it decayed. Rain swelled the river, made streams in the gutters, and turned the steep roads into Pagford glossy and treacherous. The windows of the school bus were opaque with condensation. The hanging baskets in the square became bedraggled, and Samantha Mollison, windscreen wipers on full tilt, suffered a minor collision in the car on the way home from work in the city. A copy of the Yarville and District Gazette stuck out of Mrs. Catherine Whedon's door in Hope Street for 3 days until it became sodden and illegible. Finally, social worker Kay Borden tugged it out of the letterbox, peered in through the rusty flap, and spotted the old lady spread-eagled at the foot of the stairs. A policeman helped break down the front door, and Mrs. Whedon was taken away in an ambulance to Southwest General. Still the rain fell, forcing the sign painter who had been hired to rename the old shoe shop to postpone the job. It poured for days and into the nights, and the square was full of hunchbacks in waterproofs, and umbrellas collided on the narrow pavements. Howard Mollison found the gentle patter against the dark windows soothing. He sat in the study that had once been his daughter Patricia's bedroom, and contemplated the email that he'd received from the local newspaper. They had decided to run Councillor Fairbrother's article, arguing that the fields ought to remain with Pagford, but in the interest of balance, they hoped that another councillor might make the case for reassignment in the following issue.
Backfired on you, hasn't it, Fairbrother? Thought Howard happily. There you were, thinking you'd have it all your own way.
He closed the email and turned instead to the small pile of papers beside him. These were the letters that had come trickling in, requesting an election to fill Barry's vacant seat. The Constitution stated that it required 9 applications to enforce a public vote, and he had received 10. He read them over, while his wife's and business partner's voices rose and fell in the kitchen, stripping bare between them the meaty scandal of old Mrs. Whedon's collapse and belated discovery.
"Don't walk out on your doctor for nothing, do you? Screaming at the top of her voice," Karen said.
"Saying she'd been given the wrong drugs, yes, I know," said Shirley, who considered that she had a monopoly on medical speculation, given that she was a hospital volunteer. "They'll run tests up at the General, I expect."
"I'd be feeling very worried if I were Dr. Joanda."
"She's probably hoping the Whedons are too ignorant to sue, but that won't matter if the General finds out it was the wrong medication."
"She'll be struck off," said Maureen, with relish.
"That's right," said Shirley, "and I'm afraid a lot of people will feel good riddance. Good riddance."
Methodically, Howard sorted letters into piles. Miles's completed application forms he set aside on their own. The remaining communications were from fellow parish councillors. There were no surprises here. As soon as Parminda had emailed him to tell him that she knew of somebody who was interested in standing for Barry's seat, he had expected these 6 to rally round her, demanding an election. Together with Ben's Uriah herself, there were the ones he dubbed the obstreperous faction, whose leader had recently fallen. Onto this pile he placed the completed forms of Colin Wall, their chosen candidate. Into a third pile he placed 4 more letters, which were, likewise, from expected sources, professional complainers of Pagford, known to Howard as perennially dissatisfied and suspicious, all prolific correspondents to the Yarville and District Gazette. Each had their own obsessive interest in some esoteric local issue and considered themselves independent-minded. They were to be the ones most likely to scream nepotism if Miles had been co-opted, but they were among the most anti-Fields people in town. Howard took the last two letters in each hand, weighing them up. One of them was from a woman whom he had never met, who claimed, Howard took nothing for granted, to work at the Belchapel Addiction Clinic. The fact that she styled herself Ms. inclined him to believe her. After some hesitation, he placed this on top of Cubby Wall's application forms. The last letter, unsigned and typed on a word processor, demanded an election in intemperate terms. It had an air of haste and carelessness and was littered with typos. The letter extolled the virtues of Barry Fairbrother and named Miles specifically as unfit to fill his shoes, spelt S-H-E-O-S. Howard wondered whether Miles had a disgruntled client out there who might prove to be an embarrassment. It was good to be forewarned of such potential hazards. However, Howard doubted whether the letter, being anonymous, counted as a vote for an election. He therefore fed it into the little desktop shredder that Shirley had given him for Christmas. 2. Edward Collins and Co., the Pagford solicitors, occupied the upper floor of a terraced brick house with an optician's on the ground floor. Edward Collins was deceased, and his firm comprised two men. Gavin Hughes, who was the salaried partner with one window in his office, and Miles Mollison, who was the equity partner with two windows. They shared a secretary who was 28, single, plain, but with a good figure. Shona laughed too long at all Miles's jokes and treated Gavin with a patronage that was almost offensive. The Friday after Barry Fairbrother's funeral, Miles knocked on Gavin's door at 1 o'clock and entered without waiting for a summons. He found his partner looking up at the dark grey sky through the rain-speckled window.
"I'm going to nip up the road for lunch," said Miles. "If Lucy Bevan's early, will you tell her I'll be back at 2? Shona's out."
"Yeah, fine," said Gavin. "Everything all right?" "Mary's called. There's a bit of a glitch with Barry's life insurance. She wants me to help her sort it."
"Right, well, you can handle that, can't you? I'll be back at 2 anyway."
Miles slipped on his overcoat, jogged down the steep stairs, and walked briskly up the rain-swept little street that led to the square. A momentary break in the clouds caused sunlight to flood the glistening war memorial and the hanging baskets. Miles experienced a rush of atavistic pride as he hurried across the square towards Morrison and Lowe, that Pagford institution, that classiest of emporia, a pride that familiarity had never blighted, but rather deepened and ripened. The bell tinkled at the door as Miles pushed it open. There was something of a lunchtime rush on. A queue of 8 waited at the counter, and Howard, in his mercantile regalia, fisherman's flies glinting in his deerstalker, was in full tongue.
"And a quarter of black olives, Rosemary, to you. Nothing else now? Nothing else for Rosemary? That'll be £8.62. We'll call it 8, my love, in light of our long and fruitful association."
Giggles and gratitude, the rattle and crash of the till.
"And here's my lawyer come to check up on me," boomed Howard, winking and chuckling over the heads of the queue at Miles. "If you'll wait for me in the back, sir, I'll try not to say anything incriminating to Mrs. Howson."
Miles smiled at the middle-aged ladies, who beamed back. Tall with thick, close-cropped greying hair, big round blue eyes, his paunch disguised by his dark overcoat, Miles was a reasonably attractive addition to the hand-baked biscuits and local cheeses. He navigated his way carefully between the little tables piled high with delicacies and paused at the big arch hewn between delicatessen and the old shoe shop, which was denuded of its protective plastic curtain for the first time. Maureen, Miles recognized the handwriting, had put up a sign on a sandwich board in the middle of the arch. "No entry. Coming soon. The copper kettle." Miles peered through into the clean, spare space that would soon be Pagford's newest and best cafe. It was plastered and painted with newly